Explore the night skies with our large range of high-quality telescopes. Whether you're a novice or an astronomy expert, we have the right telescope for you in our Australian Geographic e-store. Explore the whole range and find the right telescope for you today. Go to www.australiangeographic.com.au/shop. That's www.australiangeographic.com.au/shop. Hi, I'm Angela Heathcote and this is Talking Australia, a podcast by Australian Geographic. This episode, I'm talking to my colleague, Mike Ellett. Mike is the creative director of Australian Geographic. If you ever wondered who chooses which picture lands on the front cover or who makes sure the mag is full of amazing photographs and illustrations, that's Mike's job. In this episode, he opens up about his colourful career, which started in the world of music magazines. So I'm really excited to be chatting to Mike today on this episode of Talking Australia. Mike, thanks for sitting down with me.
Thanks for having me.
And so, basically, Mike has worked at Australian Geographic as a creative director for something like 8 years. And I guess a little while ago, I heard on the grapevine that you have kind of this incredible design career prior to Australian Geographic. That's completely different from, I guess, what you work on at Australian Geographic. So, take me through your design history all the way back.
Okay, well, if you went all the way back, I guess I was pretty bad at school, and I left school and went straight to art college, and I didn't really know what I was doing in the sense of, you know, I was pretty young and I didn't know where this was going to take me. And I guess when I was studying my degree, I kind of really fell in love with typography and type at that point. And I made the decision to kind of pursue a career in magazine design, and I was kind of, my college was about 40k outside of London in Surrey. And I kind of was like, my thinking behind that was I just didn't see myself, or I didn't want to be the kind of designer that would spend a year designing some kind of bank logo and working for people. And just, I'm not saying it's soul destroying, and obviously it's a very respectable part of the design industry, but I was just like, that wasn't for me. So when I was studying, there was a part of the course that was, hey, we're going to do a bit of a magazine, you know, mock-up, or you create your own magazine kind of thing, which that was something I fell in love with and enjoyed. And I was also kind of doing it on, I was like a skateboarder at the time. I know that sounds, you know, like everyone,
what?
Yeah, I know, yeah, I was a young lad. So it was great. And then how I broke in, I mean, this was way before things like, this is kind of like 1997. So, you know, Instagram and, you know, your email, all the world of the internet was just kind of coming alive at that point. And I remember writing a letter to the creative director of Esquire magazine, which is a men's magazine in the UK. And I cut, it was like a one-line letter, and I said, would you like to look at my portfolio? And then put it in the post, and then 4 days later, a reply came through in the post, and it was like, hey, yeah, give me a call and we'll come to London. So I went up to London and traipsed in with this really kind of clumsy big A2 sleeve portfolio and showed him my student work. And he was like, oh, I'll see if anyone comes up, and nothing ever did. But what I did do is I left my university and I moved in with some friends in London in, like, what I guess what you would call an extension to a student house. And I had a job in a restaurant. I was like a pizza chef in Leicester Square. It was just what you had to do to pay the bills. And in the days off, in the spare time, I would literally pick up the phone and phone up every art director or the magazines I really wanted to work on and say,
that is so ambitious.
Yeah, I was like, can you look at my portfolio? And I had the first break came when I got a work, like a kind of work experience, you know, internship, I guess you could call it, at Time Out magazine. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so over the moon. It felt such a milestone to do this. But it wasn't until I got there I realised that they did that every week. So there was always a dog body in there kind of going, make the tea and watching them work away. And I really then decided to kind of go, I'm staying for longer than a week. So I really dug in and tried to make a nuisance of myself. And I stayed there for about 3 or 4 weeks. And then that kind of led on to another magazine, which is Mojo, which is an amazing music magazine. And I did some freelance work for him for a couple of weeks. Because a lot of the problems around that time was, there were a lot of design jobs for junior designers in magazines, but it was always saying things like, you need 3 years experience and stuff like that. So you're kind of going, well, you've got to start somewhere. And, you know, I didn't have the 3 years experience, so you'd naturally apply for these jobs and you'd get nowhere. But then just through getting more little bits of experience, that kind of led to my first...
So basically taking freelance jobs.
Yeah. So, and then that led to my first real kind of, I guess, full-time job, and that was for a film magazine, which is a company called Future Publishing, and it was based in the southwest of England in a place called Bath, which is a beautiful part of the country. And I stayed there for a while, actually. It was a really good magazine because it was, well, one, the subject matter was film, and, you know, 1 month you could be designing something for a Scorsese's latest gangster flick to a sci-fi thing next month. So it was a very varied kind of piece of work. So I worked with some really great designers there and kind of learned my craft. And then that same company, later on, I moved to London. I was in London and they launched a music magazine, which I worked on. And I guess sometimes you could argue, like, you know, you learn from your failings, because I created this music magazine and it was a proper, you know, I kind of pushed the boundaries quite a lot on it. It was quite loose in design. It was really creative. I was trying to produce something that different to the industry. I was trying to really make a point of difference. And I guess what you could argue and say was a lot of creative people loved it, but that wasn't enough to give it a good circulation or give it a good, you know, survival sales base. Or
was that a difficult balance for you to strike in the beginning of your career? Was that commercial and artistic kind of balance?
When I was working on the film magazine, not so much, because the imagery and stuff you had given to you was images of the film and stuff. Do you see what I mean? So you couldn't go, you're not going to go crazy and go off, you know, do you know what I mean, off-piste or too much. But when I worked for the music magazine, we were commissioning, like, photographers, and there was an element of live photography in it, and it was all a bit kind of rock and roll, and loved it. It was great. It was like, hey, you know, we were shooting people live on stage in front of a live audience potentially, and it was the creative avenue was so much more for it, basically. And around that time as well, there was a bit of a, I guess, resurgence. There was things like Reagan magazine, which is an American magazine, and that was very kind of, it was a David Carson type product, and that was very, like, it's almost like it was a fashion to be destructive by design. It was almost like, let's make a mess, and that's unfair to say it was a mess, but I'm just saying it was very loose and very creative.
Yeah.
Almost like, you know, you could imagine people cutting up letters from magazines and creative montages. It was just very creative. It was a very creative time, and a lot of magazines, you can see that influence, but at the same time the commercial success wasn't quite there for what I did. And I definitely learned the hard way, and it lasted a year. So the magazine was 12 issues, and it was a big steep learning curve of success and failure, I guess.
Mm. And obviously your passion project obviously lied with music, and your other stuff was, I guess, arts based. Mm. How then do you get a job at Australian Geographic when, you know, a lot of your work is around a completely different area, I guess?
After the music magazine, I did work on lots of other magazines, and I worked in Men's Lifestyle, and the company I worked for at the time, it was called EMAP, and there was an EMAP in Australia and an EMAP in London. And I got a job in Australia and came out here that way with them. I then did go back to the UK for a few years, and I worked on the things that I was really passionate about. I worked on, like, a cycling magazine, which is kind of my hobby, I guess. So that was what I find is if you're really into something, you're really passionate about something, it's massive to work on them, because it just shines through on the page, definitely. When I came back to Australia, I did feel a little bit kind of, initially I was a bit underwhelmed by the newsstand. I was kind of looking at it, kind of going, and no disrespect to our industry or the people who work on these things, I was kind of looking at the newsstand and going, hey, I would look at a selection of food magazines, and to me they looked the same. It was a plate of food on the cover of a magazine, or I would look at some gossip magazines and it was the head and shoulders of somebody, and it was exactly the same. And I just felt a little bit like, am I getting the best out of what I can do here? And then just by chance, I showed my portfolio to a few people who I knew in Australia and Sydney. And then just by chance, out of the blue, the art editor, creative director at the time of Australian Geographic, said he had seen my portfolio and he would like to have a cup of tea and a cup of coffee. And I remember going to try and to buy it. I remember going to like a news agents to buy the magazine to have a look at this thing. And I couldn't buy it anywhere. I went through three or four places. And at that time, it was a very subscription-based product, so very few copies were being distributed out into the newsstand. So I finally tracked one down, and I was a bit underwhelmed. I was kind of going, oh, could I do this? But what I did see is, like, there was a map. I could see the photography was amazing, and what I felt was what was inside wasn't being shown or reflective of the covers at the time. And that's where I saw a bit of an opening. And then I met Chrissy, who is obviously my editor now, and we got on very well and worked very well together. And I guess we kind of found each other, and I guess that was start of a vision and a change of from when it was then to what it is now, I guess.
And go into what Australian Geographic kind of looked like, because obviously, although you may not have known what Australian Geographic was at the time, it does kind of have, I guess, this legacy that comes with, you know, those famous illustrated covers that people either love and miss or don't really care for. So, I mean, was that a big thing to take on?
I just felt that there was a lack of impact on the cover, and I think some of the images were, let's say, on the news, there wasn't probably a need for a newsstand presence, so maybe you could get a lot, because it was going through the post and stuff. It wasn't like you had to fight for the newsstand or do you see what I mean? So it was, and I guess that was the reasoning and the beginning of the illustrations idea, which is a beautiful set of covers, and obviously went for a very long time. I just felt that when I took it on, or when it was with me, the cover wasn't a flow bead photograph, for example. It had a white band at the top with a logo on it. So already in some ways that, you know, your space for a photograph was a square, which was quite restricting in lots of ways, because photographs aren't square. You know, you photograph them landscape or portrait. And yeah, I just, you know, it was an interesting time. And I think when I started, it was a bit of a transition. And soon after, Chrissy became editor, and thankfully working with her, the shackles were off a little bit. You know,
and is that when you kind of were like, okay, we need a redesign, and that's when that kind of went into motion?
I think it just needed a redesign. I think it had been a long time.
And what were some of the things that you kept in mind whilst undergoing that redesign?
I was definitely, you know, I was completely aware of the readership and the loyalty to the brand, so I could not in any way go crazy. You know, it was still a much loved, much read product with a strong, large word counted articles and features in it. Do you know what I mean? And that would always be the king. The photography was king. It was more kind of, I guess, trying to bring it a bit more modern and a bit more present day kind of thing. And that was what I was really thinking of. I didn't want to alienate our subscribers at all. And I guess we wanted to, yeah, give it a presence on the newsstand. And I think since I've been here, so in 8 years, it's been redesigned twice. And the second time was when we introduced the full picture on the cover. And I thought about this. I was kind of going, well, it's good, because a lot of magazines would be redesigned a lot more times in 8 years, because we've done it twice and we know it's strong or it works. I mean, there hasn't been a need for throwing it all out and starting again kind of thing. Do you see what I mean? So, I mean, we tweak and change things all the time to move it forward, but it's been staying pretty solid for a good couple of years now in the same design.
We'll be back with our conversation with Mike just after this. Subscribe to our AG magazine for 6 months for just $30 and save 33% on the newsstand price. That's 3 issues of our award-winning magazine delivered to your home for just $30. Plus, you will also receive exclusive benefits, including 10% off all products purchased in our e-store. So don't wait. go to www.australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia for our special offer. That's www.australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia. We are back with our conversation with Mike. The magazine comes out 6 times a year. So every time a magazine comes out, what's kind of your, well, not comes out, but is in the production process, what's kind of your work processes? Like, what do you sit down with the editorial team? They map out the ideas and you start there. Like, where does it all start? Or do you have templates that you constantly refer back to that stay the same? Like, what's your kind of creative process with each mag?
So we, you know, the start of any issue, we'll create a flat plan and we know what's going on and what's going in and who's writing what and who's photographing each piece. And I will speak to the photographers, we'll hopefully have ideas about what we're after, the look and feel of the features. And we'll also talk about things like infographics and cartography and all the maps needed. And it's kind of, you know, it's a little bit like, the thing looks amazing, but it's not me. It's an army of us. Do you know what I mean? We surround ourselves with really good people to go and do things. And it's commissioning and the contribution of people that all come together at the end to make it great. But it's kind of, I think I work closely with the writers. You know, if some people are in the field with the photographer at the same time. So sometimes a lot of the story is created in those moments, you know, who are they speaking to. And the photographer is actually taking portraits of animals or people or landscapes or places. And of course, when it comes back in, I'll always read the piece and then try to make it all work together quite, you know, and make it sing. You know, you can read the piece, you can see the images and you go, oh, that's so-and-so and this koala's name is Paul or et cetera, et cetera. And that's how you build a piece together, you know.
And I know this is really hard, but I mean, how do you choose which photographs go into a piece?
More often than not, say for an opener of a feature, I'll always look at the whole select of an image, and more often than not, things really jump out at you in the sense of, wow, that's an amazing photograph, or that's an amazing photograph and it sums up what we're trying to say in this feature kind of thing. Do you see what I mean? So to give you an example, there was a, we did a piece on the dingo years ago, and we had someone who went out and photographed dingoes in the wild, and there was just one dingo and it was just walking down the road and it looked over its shoulder and just had that eye contact with the camera, and it was almost quite sultry, and it was just a perfect image and summed up the animal at that point. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So you kind of get those moments with it, you know, and like similarly, you know, we've just done a piece with the koalas and the koala hospital up in Port Macquarie, and the whole piece is about the survival of the species through the bushfires, and there's two in it, and there was just two in a tree perfectly posed together, and I can see that image working really well with the typography idea that I had on the page next to it kind of thing. So sometimes it naturally happens, you know, and as I say, I don't sit in a dark room and create it and come out at the end of the days, you know, it's work in progress all the time, and I work very closely with Chrissy, obviously the editor, and even the people who write the piece, because they're the ones who were there, and it's their words as well. Do you see what I mean? So
And with, like, I guess environmental design and science design and all things like that, I guess it has kind of a bad rap in that everyone just thinks green graphs, you know, hard to read, kind of difficult to consume. So I'm wondering how you make, I mean, obviously Australian Geographic covers things like climate change and land clearing and these things that involve a lot of stats. So how do you make complex topics and really difficult stats and all of that jazz easy to read?
So I think one of the challenges when I took on the job was in my past, it was like, hey, let's just do, I'd work for a magazine and it would be, here's a, you know, album review or a fashion feature on a woman, and you just throw it all on the page and it looks great, you know. That can never happen here. It's so kind of like, the information has to be amazing, has to be correct, has to be well thought out, has to be clear. What am I looking at? Does it work? You know, there's all this, and it's, I guess Australian Geographic is the only bi-monthly magazine I've worked on. So the good thing about that is you have the luxury to spend time and put energy to make things work. So I kind of pride myself on the infographic side of things and the cartography side of things. So what I tend to do is, you know, we'll have an infographic on, say, eating insects, when we did the thing about the people eating insects around the country. And I would look around and I'd look at other infographics of a similar nature, or I would get inspired by style and feel of other things around me, because I don't want it to be boring. I do want it to be fresh and modern. And one of the magazines I love is, like, you know, Wired in the UK and in the US, and how they show their information and lay it out is amazing and creative. It's not dull. It might be dull information, but the way they do it is absolutely fresh, modern, and brand new. And I try to bring a bit of that into Australian Geographic, but at the same time, knowing the potential demographics of some of our readers, you know, it can't be too way out. You know, the font's got to be clear. I can't be too crazy, but I just try to be creative, clear. The information's got to be right. And interestingly, some of the things that I do, sometimes, you know, I'll get a, you know, I was thinking about, we did a poster and it was the whales and dolphins of Australia. And the way we designed the poster was I wanted them all to be in scale. So there was a picture of a diver and he was, he was in scale to, say, a minke whale or a blue whale. So when you did all that, you designed it all so they were all in scale correctly. It almost created its own scientific design on a poster quite naturally. Do you see what I mean? It was almost a beautiful thing. And the job was done for you. The hard work was doing the scaling and working it all out. But when it was done, it was almost like quite rewarding because the information was correct. The illustrations were beautiful and it was all represented correctly. You know what I mean? So that's equally as important to say something that is over artistic and maybe too designed. Do you know what I mean? So,
is there any particular thing or project that stands out for you that you're most proud of at Australian Geographic?
I think sometimes, you know, there's some things that are very difficult, and when you nail them and you get them right, that's great. So one example was a few years ago we did a bird's migration poster from Antarctica through Australia, New Zealand, and there's obviously 40 or 50 different species of birds, and they had different flight patterns and they flew different lengths. And it was this, I looked in the map and I was like, it was just a mass of information. You know, I was going, how am I going to do this? It was just, and obviously you needed to be correct. And it was great. I worked with Will, who's our cartographer, and Michael Payne, who is one of our great illustrators, I've worked with him for a long time. And between the three of us, we almost took the information and broke it down and put it on the poster beautifully. And then all of the illustrations of the birds were on there. It was just so much information, you know, it was a lot of work. And there's a few of those kind of projects when you get real complex stuff and you deliver it amazing. It was great. I mean, another example was I did a poster of all the shipwrecks around Australia. And it was obviously so many. And you had things like areas like Sydney, which were just really congested. So I had to pull them out of a map and make them bigger, and it had to be, so it was just, you know, when you're working with so much information and you're trying to put it across on paper, that can be a challenge. But when you do it right, it's obviously rewarding, and they last for a long time. You know, those posters will be used. We have them here on file, and every now and again people phone up and say, hey, can we use that? Or where did you get that information from? Do you see what I mean? It's almost like a really good piece of reference material, you know.
Tell me about the different arts, books, graffiti, all these other things that you may come across in life that you might draw inspiration from.
I do draw a lot of inspiration outside of just magazine work. You know, I love book covers. I love even the abstract Netflix series, which has a great, you know, selection of people and different artists and different genres that, you know, and I so they have like photographers and illustrators and even typographers, stage designers, and kind of really when you watch those, you know, watch those series, I can definitely see a thread through each individual and how they work. And you can definitely see the link in creativity between these people. Anything creative, I really take something from. We recently did an illustration with Nomar Barr, who just as an illustrator and quite a modern illustrator and a very good one. And I find his work just very clever and unique, and I really wanted to get him in the magazine, and we were just trying to find the right opportunity for when that would be, and it was when we did the deforestation piece. And luckily he agreed to illustrate and work with us. And as a designer, you always use your eyes. You kind of go, what do I like? What do I see? What is great? What is different? You know, films and documentaries and stuff like that, I really enjoy. I mean, I watched an Alexander McQueen, the fashion designer, documentary on him recently, and he was, you know, amazing as a fashion designer, because he wanted to be a point of difference and a break from the norm. And I think there was a famous quote in that documentary where he's like, he didn't want people to come to his shows and feel like they were having Sunday lunch. You know, he really wanted to make people feel uncomfortable. And I'm not saying that kind of represents my work or it comes across so in my work. I just, it's, there's so many great creative people out there. And when I was at art college, one of my lecturers I always remember, he said, as a designer or someone in design, the only thing you have is your eyes. If you don't use your eyes in looking around and seeing things and constantly taking stuff in, you're not gonna get very far in it all, really. I'm kind of one of those kind of OCD people that walk around the streets and look at street signs and fonts and what's that, is that new, and who's using that kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? It's a constant thing. Yeah, I think my wife thinks I'm a little bit hyperactive and a bit of an oddball, like, kind of thing. So, you know, it's definitely, and obviously nowadays, you know, you have, you know, our culture is Instagram and such, it's thrown into your face so much. And I think in some ways that's a good thing, but I also think it's a bad thing, because I think it's almost like we've got numb to it. So you have to look for the good stuff and you have to find the good stuff. Whereas the swiping of a screen culture is great and interesting in lots of ways, but I also think people are just not even using it as they should do. It's interesting, when I first had something like Facebook, it was something you read and looked at, and now it's something you click on, and now it's something I turn on in the morning, scroll through as quick as possible and turn it off and not really pay any attention to it. So I think that's a danger we're living in with the media and social age, and that's in some ways why I love what I do, because what I put down on paper is hard work for real, for keeps, and should be there for a long time. Do you see what I mean? And for people to keep and go back to.
Mm. And obviously there would be a lot of different, a lot of people out there who are looking at your career and just what you are right now as the creative director of Australian Geographic, thinking, okay, how do I get there? So what would be your advice for them?
I think it takes time. It definitely takes a lot of time. You know, you have to, If you were looking at magazines now, it might be slightly different than the trajectory I had, because I guess you could argue that magazines was in the heyday when I was working them in the 90s to now. What I would suggest and say is, if you want to work in magazines, aim to work on a magazine you're really passionate about and you want to work in, because when you're in a room full of the same people who are equally passionate about that product or that subject matter, it will come through and it helps, and it kind of comes through in your work, it comes through on your page. You're happy to be there, you want to be there, you're excited. It's almost like you're a sponge for the information and design and the people you work with around you, kind of thing. So that would be my advice. I don't think it's a case of going, I want to aim high and be that, because I think in this industry, like a lot nowadays, that you could be on one path and it can change direction quite quickly, and you could be somewhere else equally happy and doing something creative in other areas as well. Do you see what I mean? So I would say it's more following your passion, because that ultimately is the thing that rises to the top and comes out of you the best. And that's quite unusual for me, because I've learned my passion here, really. It wasn't so obvious straight away, and it kind of gave me another element of design and another area of design that I really grabbed hold of and was and I grew really passionate about, basically.
Well, that's some beautiful advice to end on. Thanks so much for hanging out with me, Mike.
That's okay, thank you.
That's it for today's episode of Talking Australia with Mike Ellett. If you have questions or comments, feel free to reach out. Write us an email, podcast@australiangeographic.com, or find us on Instagram @AustralianGeographic. And if you go to australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia, you'll find a special subscription offer. So don't wait, go to australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from. Thanks for listening. Until next time.